For NPR News, I'm Raul Bally in Atlanta.
It's Kentucky Derby Day, the first leg of horse racing's Triple Crown. There's no clear favorite in this year's Run for the Roses, but leading contenders include Renegade, Commander, and Further Ado. The last horse to win the Triple Crown was Justify in 2018. I'm Nora Rahm, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Luminescence Foundation. Luminescence Foundation is dedicated to shedding light on neurological research focused on Alzheimer's and Parkinson's diseases and supporting land conservation initiatives. This is NPR.
Welcome to The Conversation on WVIK, a weekly celebration of local radio the way it's meant to be brewed. This week, my guest is Amy Schaefer from YWCA of the Quad Cities. I'm Kai Swanson. I hope you'll stick around for this week's Conversation on WVIK. Well, Amy Schaefer, thank you so much for taking a little bit of time out of what I know to be a very busy schedule. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
And I know you do lots of everything, but what is your actual title?
So I'm the director of the Empowerment Center at the YWCA.
All right.
So I oversee our empowerment services.
And you know what I love about the Y, we're going to dive deep into Y history, is that from the get-go, more than 100 years ago, that's what the Y has been about, is empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
That is
Absolutely.
So cool. But first, I got to get to know you. Where'd you grow up? Are you local, a transplant? How'd we get you?
Awesome. So I grew up in Moline. My family is a transplant, so we moved here in about 2000. And I grew up here, went to Moline High School, went off to Iowa State for college, came back, said I wasn't going to stay, and stumbled my way into to a position with the Y. And here we are almost 10 years later. So
I love that because, you know, so I love those stories where, you know, I'm going to go off. I'm going to go all over the place. And, you know, I never got very far from home. So I've been here the whole time. So I'm very grateful to hear that. But I know there's got to be more to the story. Growing up in Moline, and Moline schools, fantastic. We've had people on talking about the great creative writing program and all these different things. What were the things that caught your fancy as a young person growing up when you were in school?
So I was into athletics. I played softball all the way through into college. And then I became a lifeguard when I was 15 years old. And so that just opened a lot of doors to me to learning about all kinds of things in life, but especially just how to interact with people. I think I learned so many people skills when I was lifeguarding as a 15-year-old and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I ask where you lifeguarded?
Riverside in Moline.
Riverside. Because yep. I was going to say there used to be a place in Moline, and maybe you're too young for this, is the Camelot Club, and they always had lifeguards, and I had friends who were there. But did you play softball at Iowa State?
I played club, yep. I played on the club
wow.
team, so we got to travel, still do a lot of the really cool things. I loved it.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
And now, how did you get into the lifeguarding thing?
You know, it was one of my best friends. She was like, hey, do you want to take the lifeguarding class? You know, it's this weekend. And I was like, I don't know. I'm really busy. I play softball. I'm busy every weekend. And she said, just do it. So we signed up together. We did it. It was hard at the time. And, you know, we became lifeguards. I was working Monday through Thursday, and then I'd go play softball Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and that's all I did all summer long. But I loved it. I mean, all my friends were lifeguards. We hung out like after the pool closed. It was just the most fun thing in the whole world. And so that led me into working at the pool at Iowa State while I was playing softball, and just so many cool opportunities and great people that I met through that.
I was really lucky. We grew up pretty much right on the border between Rock Island and Moline. So on any given weekend, we're either going to go to Riverside, the old one. I can still smell that brick locker room building.
They'd check your toes, remember that?
Or Longview in Rock Island, the old Longview. I mean, the current Whitewater Junction is great. And I got to say, I haven't been to the new extravaganza in Moline, but sometime I got to go to that.
Mm-hmm.
Check that out.
I went to take a back behind the scenes tour when they were finishing it, because that was my time was the original slides. So I was after the renovations when they put the zero depth in.
Yeah,
I had the original slides, and then the first year I was a manager, the year they knocked the slides down, so they had like the very you know, basic pool with the inflatable stuff. So, yeah. So when they did all the renovations, we were all so happy because they were, you know, that was always behind the scenes. We're going to get it done someday. And someday came.
Yeah,
really,
that's
exciting.
Cool. It is really exciting. And we're getting into that season right now. Yeah. That'll be a lot of fun. But nowadays, we don't need to wait for that season because we can go to the YWCA in Rock Island 365,
you
right?
Man, beautiful slide. We got the lazy river inside. That was like, oh, watching that pool be built and just become. I started with the Y and the aquatic side. So just to see the dreams come into real life. And just, I mean, the pool, the lazy river in the pool, I'd worked at a pool at college and it had a vortex. And I remember telling Julie, our CEO, I was like, we've got to find a way to put something that moves inside the pool.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I got to go there a couple of times and it's not that lazy. If you're swimming against it, it's a good workout.
Yeah.
It's a nice little workout.
Yeah.
All right. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. Iowa State. What did you, what was your, what did you study at Iowa State? But also, well, first tell me what you mostly studied.
Well, my degree was in marketing. We'll put it that way.
Fantastic.
I think
Fantastic.
We all study life when we go to college, though.
Well, that's what I always ask, because I love to know what somebody majored in. That's interesting. But what I'm more interested in, do you remember classes you took that had nothing to do with marketing that were still really impressive for you?
So I was, by credit, a religion minor.
Hey!
I found religion, I still find religion very interesting. I love the history. I had a really, really incredible professor who was a Catholic nun, but also held a PhD in biology. And she taught almost all of the classes I took and just like really gave us such a broad view of religion. And it just really opened up just so many ways to think about life. I think it really gave me so much perspective. And honestly thought about changing my major a couple times. And she kind of said, you know, a marketing degree might take you a little further in life, Amy. I said, okay, thank you. So Anne was the best.
Yeah. So you mentioned that your involvement with the YWCA kind of started on that aquatic side. Tell us about that, how that journey began.
Yeah, absolutely. So I had really, my goal degree was like a parks and rec degree. Iowa State didn't have that. So the marketing just felt like it, you know, filled the gap. I really wanted to go into pools. So I started managing the Moline pool when I was 18. Came back every summer and managed it. Worked at rec services at Iowa State. Moved up into like head lifeguard positions there. So I had a really robust like aquatics background. I mean, I was like, I'm going to work on pools for the rest of my life. It's going to be the best thing ever. So move home, applied for a job, didn't get it, was really bummed. You know, said I'll go back to the pool one more summer, see what happens. And I get a text from one of my coworkers at the pool. And she's like, hey, there's this position open at the YWCA for an aquatics director. And I'm like, that's my dream job. I want to, you know, and I always knew inside that it wasn't going to be like, I wanted to work for the government or for a nonprofit or something like that. I knew I didn't want to do like the grind. And I always say, I never want to work for the man. It's kind of my shtick.
Good for you.
And so when I saw that I took a couple nonprofit marketing classes in college and I was like, it's a nonprofit. This is so cool. Applied for it, went into my interview and they're like, this is great. Took me back to the old pool at the old YWCA. Mm-hmm, like, this is your pool. And I was like, okay, here we go. And it was, you know, it was very different than what I had imagined at the time. You know, I imagined a big, you know, giant pool with all the things. But when I did my interview, I said my degree is in marketing. And Julie, our CEO, said, well, would you be interested in doing some marketing for us as well? Because I think that we are going to look for a marketing director and we could kind of pair these two positions together. And so I basically jumped in feet first and that's where I started.
Well, I have great memories of that pool. I just want to say kudos to you. Many people would have run away the minute they saw the old pool, right?
In
downtown
windows.
Rock Island. No windows. Yes, that's right. I'm going to sneak some disclosures into you, but my memories of that building go back to, I think, 1968 or 1969. Mm-hmm. My mother had three boys, and I think I was the last. I think she was really hoping for a girl. In fact, she told me that she had the name picked. I was going to be Kajsa, which is also a Swedish name. But of course, that was the first of my many disappointments of my mother. but there was something about, she saw that at that time they had ballet classes. I mean, so many classes had been there. But she said, you know what? One of my children is going to be in dance. So she brought me there. I'm grateful for those memories and that care now. But when you were like a 5-year-old boy, I don't want to do this. The only boy in the class, you know, nowadays I go to my granddaughter's stuff and there's boys all over. It's great. It's fantastic. But not in the late 60s. And the saving grace was, so she would drop me off there for class. And then she had other things to do, maybe pick up my older brothers. And my dad would pick me up from class and he would bribe me with a Hot Wheels. So if I did the class, I got a Hot Wheels. So, you know, positive reinforcement.
I love it. Yeah.
It's just a little something like that. But no, I'm so grateful for those memories now. But that was something. And the boy, that building, talk about venerable. It's but it was also very functional. Mm-hmm. Think of all the things you did there. Oh, gym, yeah. Pool, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. We always call it well-loved. Whenever I talk about it, now that we're in the new building, we say we loved every inch of that building. We loved ourselves out of it, really.
Mm. Well, and then it was an institution for innumerable families, but my aunt, Charlene Sindelius, and one of her great buddies, Martha Stone, were part of a swimming clique. And I think I heard you say earlier, pool ladies, were they known as that? Tell me about
ladies.
That culture.
Oh, there were so many.
Tell
cliques.
Me about
oh,
that culture.
Gosh. So I walked in, coming from a very a collegiate aquatics background and a, outdoor pool with kids everywhere. And I walked into the average age of a pool patron being probably in the 70s. And so, I've always been someone who I really cherish of the mature viewpoint. So it was actually really great. I got to know a lot of really great women, some who are with us, some who aren't anymore. And just to listen to them and to listen to them talk about their stories and their life, because when you're the only lifeguard in this pool with three people who are women who live alone, have probably lost a spouse, and they got a lot to say. And I'm new, so they're telling me everything. I mean, I knew everything about these women, but in the best ways. But I will say the cliques were funny. They, oh my gosh, there's different times for the classes, and the 9 a.m. class would come in, and gosh, if the people before that weren't out of the pool, they'd be staring them down. Or if you got somebody new in the pool, they'd always say, "We want more members." And then sometimes they'd, someone new would come in and it would be like, "Well, who's that?" I'm like, "Hey, it's okay. We're going to make friends." And they did. But it was there's a child care center upstairs, and I'm like, "Yes. We need to come down and teach you guys the same lessons as we teach the 3-year-olds, because new friends are good."
Oh, Amy. This is fantastic. I love the way you say it. They had a lot to say.
They did. And they so many great and profound things that I still keep with me, and so many hilarious stories too.
Oh, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. And we're getting great stories right now, friends. Amy Schaefer is my guest here on The Conversation. I'm going to pause just for a second to let you know that this is the end of our public media days here at WVIK. We have a special thing going on. A very special challenge grant was made that if you were to go to WVIK.org and see that bright red donate button on the front page. Guess what? During this special period, which ends today, we are able to take up to $15,000 in contributions, and they'll be double matched. So let me do the math for you. That's like going to Lago Marcino's and saying, you know what? I'd like 15 bucks worth of chocolate. And Beth Lago Marcino then gives you 45 bucks worth of chocolate. This is like going on to Circa 21 and say, I want 150 bucks worth of tickets for their new production of Fiddler on the Roof, which is just opening. It's going to be phenomenal. And they give you $450 worth of tickets. Now, friends, this is like you go over to Jerry and Sparky's on Locust Street in Davenport. You buy 1,500 bucks worth of bicycle. Great bikes they have over there. But they turn around and give you $4,500 worth of. You wouldn't pass up that deal, would you? So right now, during public media days, if you go to WVIK.org and find that donate button and make a pledge today. And I should say, because of our rebroadcast, this doesn't go on Monday night. This is just right here on Saturday, May 2nd. You make that pledge and it will be double matched. So sorry for that commercial, Amy, but we got to make sure people know about public media days while we've got them here. So you and I are talking about the why, and we're going to get to a very important chapter in the life of this organization, which is over 100 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, this history here in our community. But another story I love to share is that my daughter, Olivia, who's now 31, had a little bit of a touchy start. She was a premature infant. And one of the things that was recommended to us is at the time, the YW had a program in infant massage. And it was said that, especially for preemies who might have some tactile differences and things like that, that it was very good. And so I would go down there and take my classes with Olivia. And she has no memory of that. But let me tell you something. I can put that 31-year-old, just like when she was 12, like she was any, just start the right massage on the back of her neck and her shoulders, and she will, her blood pressure will drop. I can almost put her to sleep. But that was the best investment. So if there's new parents out there, take a look. See if you can find an infant massage class, because it really worked out for us. And I will forever be grateful to the YW for those memories in the old building of sitting there on a little mat with a tiny person that was only about 4 pounds at the time and doing that massage. So by extension, thank you, Amy.
You are welcome. I'm happy we could provide that.
So when did the process start of saying, this building has been well-loved, but we need to move to a new chapter?
You know, I was hired about 10 years ago, and the process had definitely started. There were conversations of what's next, because we were bursting at the seams of the building. I mean, the need for childcare has been growing exponentially, and we were just, you know, we would love to provide something new and spruced up for our families that we serve and for the clients that we serve. And so I kind of walked in as there were many ideas being thrown around for what our future looked like, and we finally landed on, we need to build new. You know, we need to find something. We need to stay in downtown Rock Island. That was very important to us, to stay in Rock Island, be as close as we could. And you can actually still see from our lending library, our old building, which has not been repurposed. But so we could still see it. And we had, you know, located some land that we could purchase and some places that we could use. And when we made the decision to really start the capital campaign, it was right before COVID started. So the $9 million building turned into a $20 plus million building, but it is open and operating. And it is, we just, every time I walk in there still, it's been almost 3 years, I think now. And I walk in there and I'm just like, oh, it just feels great. It's just such a beautiful space. And the energy in it is just so exciting. Mm-hmm. Still to this mm-hmm. day. Mm-hmm. And the old building, there's nothing wrong with it. Again, I well loved is, I mean, the it was leaking love almost. It was just so people used it and loved it, and all these amazing stories of the history of the building.
Yeah.
And, you know, and now we get this fresh new, where we get to fill it with our own love.
And the older facility was not quite as accessible for people, especially with mobility issues. Absolutely. Which is surprising considering the wonderful elderly people that you were able to help over the years.
Yes.
I've been to the new Y countless times for public forums that you host, mm-hmm. which are great. And then I snuck in on the preview weekend with the grandkids in the pool. That's when I learned that's a pretty good current mm-hmm. in your not so lazy river. Yeah. But the slides there and everything else. But also, you talked about childcare. And I want to get into the way that the Y melds so many needs in our community, but also propels so much development in our community. Mm-hmm. And I think looking through the lens of childcare is a good place to start.
Yeah, I think it's so important to all of us that all of our services are holistic. We can help people from the day they find out they're pregnant through some empowerment services to when their child is born. We offer state aid through Illinois and Iowa for the Child Care Center. So families that maybe don't, you know, that meet certain income thresholds have the ability to access really high quality childcare. But we also welcome, you know, self-pay families. So it's a place for every family. But then while you're there, I mean, you're accessing that beautiful pool. You're working in our brand new outdoor facility where there's a upstairs enclosed playground for the kiddos. It's so neat. There's the gym. There's the accessibility of being in that beautiful downtown area where we can take the kids for a walk and be outside in the sunshine. I mean, we can, and we walk with them through, you know, school age care. And as they age out of school age, we have our after school program. As they age out of that, we've got like other youth housing programs if they need that hand holding, or they can come back and mentor for the youth program. I mean, we could walk with someone from basically, you know, when they're in their mother's womb until they're, you know, using our pool and one of my pool ladies someday. I mean, it's just really neat to provide services for the length of someone's life.
Mm-hmm. Are there still quote unquote pool ladies?
Oh, absolutely.
Good. Yes.
So many of them. They made a few of them were very nervous to make the move to the new center. But they many of them, almost all of them, have made the leap, and we've grown together. We've learned, you know, it was so funny to me, the very first class that they had, that 9 a.m. group that I was talking about earlier, they walk in and they're like, well, how are we going to do this? And I'm like, you know what? I know it's new and I know you're used to something. I'm like, but it's new and it's larger and we're going to figure it out. And if it changes a little bit, it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, now it's, you know, if I would have make them go back to the old pool, they'd be livid. So I think we've all grown into it, you know.
Well, so nodding to the history here for a minute, was it 1918, I think?
1917.
Okay, yeah. Well, thank you for that. So I think there's this great through line thread about aquatic safety, because in 1915 in Illinois, a very traumatic maritime accident occurred. There was a steamship tied up right next to the dock on the Chicago River, and it flipped, and it was a horrendous loss of life because people couldn't even swim just that far. And so they started passing these laws in Illinois and elsewhere that said you had to have safety training, learn how to the basics of swimming. Mm-hmm. Augustana opens its first swimming pool in 1916. Right now we're on our third here, but and what I found interesting is that if you joined the Y, I think for a buck in 1970, open on New Year's Day, part of that membership got you access to the Augustana pool and learning to swim and doing all that kind of stuff, plus workout facilities that were part of the Rock Island schools. But right from the get-go, an employment bureau for women. Mm-hmm. I think that's phenomenal.
Yeah, the level of collaboration throughout the over 100 years has just been, I mean, it's always like we're working with partners, we're looking for partners, we're trying to find ways to empower women through whatever they need.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of those ways. There was also like the original building had a sort of dormitory space.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
So in that time, lots of families living out in, you know, the outer skirts of the area, when the Industrial Revolution picks up and there's jobs to be had in the inner city areas, young women would go and work, and they would come into town, you know, whatever way they could get there. And the YWCA provided dormitories for these women to stay in during the times they were working, so they could have somewhere to lay their head and be safe. Because before that, I mean, we don't know where people were staying. I mean, they had the YMCA is down there as well. And so we just, you know, were able to provide that safe place for people to lay their head, which, you know, comes full circle in so many ways for us now.
Well, it's not a story about our beloved Quad Cities YWCA, but in the summer of 52, when my mom was a college kid, she decided to spend the summer in Chicago, make some money, and she stayed at the YWCA in Chicago. And that was the summer that the Republicans had their presidential convention in Chicago. Now, she claimed she was working as a waitress right in the Loop and staying at the Y. She claims that she served Dwight Eisenhower, who was at that convention, of course. But, you know, she was always a little fast and loose with the truth. So maybe just some, you know, follicularly challenged gentleman came in and she decided it was Ike. But anyway, the Y has been a big part of the family ever since. We're just talking about this transition, though. So moving from the older building to the new building, when you 3 years, did you say? Because I was there for the groundbreaking.
Oh my gosh.
And yeah. I was there for a gala, but how long has it been open?
I think we opened, it might be 2 years. It might have been 24.
They all blend together for me.
Yeah, it is just a blur since it's been open.
Yeah.
2 or 3 years we've been there.
But you're doing empowerment.
And
we're going to take a break here in a little bit. We still got some time, but we're going to talk more about that later. But what I don't think people understand is the depth of programming and that early indicator of an employment bureau connecting women with economic opportunity or empowering women. Tell me about your favorite part of that program.
Gosh. So we work with so many other agencies to make great connections for people. I think that's one of our strongest capabilities is we can reach out to other agencies. We have these beautiful relationships where we can say, I've got this client. These are the needs. Who, you know, how can we get them there? And then we have these really warm handoffs where we're able to make sure that people feel supported through every step.
Well, handoffs are going to be exactly what we talk about in just a moment. We're going to come back to the conversation on WVIK and my guest, Amy Schaefer, the head of empowerment for the YWCA of the Quad Cities. But right now we're coming up on 29 minutes past the hour. It means time for a break on The Conversation right here on your public radio station, WVIK.
Support for WVIK comes from iSurgeons Associates, providing eye care to the Quad Cities for over 40 years. Services include eye exams, cataract surgery, LASIK, and retina care, with locations in Bettendorf, DeWitt, Muscatine, Rock Island, and Geneseo. More at esaeyecare.com. And support for WVIK comes from Aunt Rhody's Landscaping and Design Studio in Eldridge. Designing and installing landscapes to include patios, fire pits, ponds, outdoor lighting, and more. A full scope of services and scheduling consults is available at AuntRhody's.com.
And support for WVIK also comes from Golder Care Solutions, offering advice about preserving assets, planning for the nursing home, and navigating Medicaid. Golder Care Solutions has been serving the Quad Cities since 2008. More information is at goldercare.com.
I'm Ann Calder from Geneseo, Illinois, and WVIK is my NPR station.
And on your NPR station, Ann, it's The Conversation on WVIK. And I'm grateful to have a chance to chat with Amy Schaefer from the YWCA of the Quad Cities. Now, we're just starting to get into the nature of empowerment, empowering women, which is a fundamental part of the mission. I think it's just simply empower women, which is a phenomenal thing. Talk to us about some of the other offerings that we might be able to take advantage of, or we might have someone in our neighborhood or our family who could take advantage of. So tell us about some of the opportunities.
Yeah, so the Empowerment Center, we run our main building out of Davenport, and we have on site, we have a choice-based food pantry, so folks get to come in and shop for the food that they want. It's not, you know, a box of food. We've switched from that model, and it's been so amazing. We've got a clothing closet there where it's fully funded by donations, so if you have anything to donate, you can always bring it our way. We've got household goods, we've got hygiene items. We've got free on-site laundry and showers, which is a pretty unique offering. People can come in and take showers as frequently as they need to, and then they can schedule a time to do their laundry. And then one of our biggest anchor services is that we are a diaper bank. So we are able to order diapers in really large quantities. I actually got to unload 5 pallets of diapers on Wednesday for our beautiful, now we call it our diaper room, where it is just a giant stockpile of diapers. But families can access our diaper services once a week. And recently, new data came out about people who have children in diapers, and half of the families that have children in diapers are facing diaper insecurity.
Now I want to dwell on that for a second. Half, friends. Yes. Think about that for a minute. We love to see people with new babies when we're in a cafe or something like that. Half are facing some insecurity. Yep.
And that would mean that at some point in the month, they're not sure where, you know, the next diaper is going to come from.
Yeah.
And to us, like, that has been such a huge anchor service to how we provide what we provide. People come in for the diapers, stay for the other things. Our building stability and just knowing that they can come back to us. We have families that come once a month because it just gets to the end of the month and things are tight. We have families that come once a week because that is what they need at that time. But it's such an incredible place where we really are able to help people in just such a full service model. We also bring in a lot of partner agencies. So I have WIC there. I have a couple other agencies that provide services for young children that come in so that parents are aware of what's available to them. Because to me, everyone's time is super valuable. And so if I can provide to someone who has, you know, such a finite amount of time to come in and get what they need, some extra details or services, like, let's do it. It's really a cool place.
So we're learning a lot in the last year or two about rather capricious cuts at the federal government level, some on the state level in Iowa, and how maybe folks are facing additional pressures and challenges. Are you seeing that at the Y?
Absolutely. So we, because of the change in model and just the growing need of our community, we had about 580% growth from January to December last year.
500.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. This last month in April alone, I served over 980 visits to our center. And that's with duplication of families to an extent, but I believe it was about 400 unduplicated families that accessed our services. We're seeing between 50 and 70 families a day. The need in our community is growing. And part of the ability to provide this is to provide stability. So people are happy with what they're getting when they come to us. So they're telling their friends, and that's fueling our growth as well. So it's very important to me that everyone that comes in knows that they have a place they can come. They're going to always have the staples. They're always going to be able to access these things. And they can just know that it's a safe space to be.
Yeah. I really like the fact that you mentioned this before. We could talk further about it, but the role of the Y in making these connections, right? Mm-hmm. So there used to be, the founder of this station and this show, Don Wooten, was pretty impressive, but even he was eclipsed by his amazing spouse, Bernadette Wooten, who she helped to start something that was called Information and Referral. And it would just be, if you needed help, but you didn't know where to go, you could turn there. And it sounds like the Y is helping to fulfill that role, the YWCA in the Quad Cities.
Yeah, we're really trying to just, again, like, create a space for warm handoff. So people come into us and maybe they do have a good relationship with the team, and they say, hey, I need help with this much larger picture. I'm having mental health struggles. I'm dealing with the need to pay a utility bill. You know, where do I turn? And it is so easy to be able to say, great, we know exactly where you can turn. Here's exactly who you call. Let me sit with you and make that phone call. Let me, you know, encourage you through the process. Let me tell you exactly what to say so they know what you're looking for, instead of, because every once in a while, especially when people are overwhelmed, they don't know what to say. They're just sitting there saying, I need help. And when you can say, okay, this is how you navigate this, and you can give them a roadmap, they're already a step ahead.
Well, for folks like me who may not need the services directly, is there a way we can help out?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's so many ways you can help out. You could donate financially. That's a very easy way. Like I said, in the way that we're a national diaper bank, it's kind of like how Riverbend's a food bank. It's cheaper for us to purchase the things than for you to donate them. So that's one easy way. You can always donate. We will take food. We will take, if you have a kiddo that's a sized out of diapers and you want to bring them, we can, you know, facilitate those landing in the hands of a parent who needs them. Clothing, we always take clothing donations, household goods. I always say there's like just about any, I can find a home for just about anything. So we don't take large furniture. That's really about it. I'd direct you to like humble dwellings, things like that. But other than that, I mean, there's so many ways you can donate your time. I mean, the gift of your time is so valuable. My team will attest to that. We are busy. So we need help stocking shelves. We need help tidying up. We need help sorting donations. We need help with our large food deliveries. And also at the Rock Island Center, there's so many opportunities as well with the youth programs there. So if you've got any kind of time or talent, we were happy to help you find a good place to put it.
Now, if only there were some place on the World Wide Web where I could find out more details.
Absolutely.
What would that be?
Our website is ywcaqc.org.
Yeah, very easy. Yeah. ywcaqc.org. Mm-hmm. That's phenomenal. Yeah. So this mission that we talked about a moment ago, and one of the things I've always found very compelling about the Y as a Quad Cities organization is, yes, it is empower women, but then the next two words are end racism. Mm-hmm. Talk about the threads of that in the history and the DNA of the Y.
Yes, I think for the YWCA as a whole, our biggest goals are to promote equity. And so to find ways to provide an equitable space for people to succeed. And whatever that is, it's whatever, when you walk into our door, it's what you need. It's not what we think you need. And I think that's something we've kind of switched, especially in the Empowerment Center. We found a way to switch into a much more equitable model. And that promotes dignity. I mean, that's to me like the core values that we sit on, you know, eliminating racism, empowering women, and then promoting equity, freedom, and peace for all. I mean, it's just, we have to like lean into these things. But one of the biggest ways we can do that is to promote equity and then work by that to eliminate racism.
Right. And, you know, for those who really believe in the American dream, it's about access to opportunity.
Absolutely.
And we need to create that.
Yes.
The reason I'm so grateful that the Y is sticking with that mission is you give a very, I think, eloquent and passionate defense of the word equity, but the word equity is under assault from so many corners. In fact, there are even programs that we've had at the college that are geared more towards young women, and we're being told, no, you can't do that anymore. But hopefully an organization like the Y has so much cred built up that when it wants to empower a gender, it's allowed to do so. Mm-hmm. When it wants to create equity, even though that's the E in DEI, in some places you're not allowed, I guess, to say those letters in that order anymore. But I'm just very proud that here in the Quad Cities, and it's not just in Rock Island, it's across the Quad Cities. So on that note, actually, let's talk about, you mentioned the Empowerment Centers, where that is. Mm-hmm. What other footprints does the Y have in the Quad Cities?
So we do have our current building in Rock Island, and then we do have our old building in Rock Island. The old 229 16th Street has been converted into a youth group home. So that is a space where youth who are under the care of DCFS are able to be placed. They are, you know, removed from a household for whatever reason, they're able to come to a safe place to lay their head, to have staff 24 hours a day, to have access to school, food, homework, help, all the things. Mental health care is huge. They're able to, you know, travel to the appointments that they need. But what we were seeing in the Quad Cities, and something that we, again, are able to help with now, is caseworkers were having youth sleeping on their floor. I mean, other agencies that provide these services so robustly had nowhere to take these youth. And so now to be able to provide that and work hand in hand with these other agencies to say, hey, you know, they come here, we do this, you help with the family side. It's just been a very, very great service to provide to the Quad Cities.
It is. And it's one of yet another one of the great threads in the story that is YWCA of the Quad Cities. This is the time, my guest is Amy Schaefer, by the way, and this is the time, Amy, every week where we step aside for another great storyteller, a fellow named Roald Tweet, and this week's particular installment of Rock Island Lines.
This is Roald Tweet on Rock Island. For several years in the 1980s, there was a night janitor at a local college library who was as interesting as any of the books. As with many school janitors, sweeping was only a cover job. His real purpose for working in a library was to corner patrons who came there eager for knowledge and set them straight before they reached the shelves of books and became contaminated. All books were suspect. Science books especially were in a conspiracy to block out the truth. Any willing listener browsing among the dim stacks in the library recesses got free lectures. Leaning on his broom, looking straight into your eyes, Al explained the secrets of the universe, how every star sent out unfelt waves to Earth. Corn stars caused corn to grow, wheat stars wheat. "It's the same soil," he said. "How else can the seed know which plant to grow?" There were bad stars, too. Cancer stars and diabetes stars and asthma stars one needed to avoid. Rays coming at you from everywhere. Al was especially good when it came to darkness. Most people, he explained, didn't understand that darkness was real. Even college science teachers, he scoffed, believed that dark was merely the absence of light. "All wrong," said Al. "As the sun rises in the morning, and as its rays grow stronger and stronger, they begin to push the darkness back into the earth. But when the sun goes down in the evening, the darkness pushes up against the weakening rays and emerges from the earth." He had proof. Stretch your hand out on a sunny day. You block the sun's rays, and sure enough, there on the ground is a shadow, darkness coming up out of the ground, until you take your hand away and the sun pushes the darkness back. "I never used to be afraid of my own shadow, and I'm sure Al is wrong. I trust books. But I can't quite shake the notion that that shadow I cannot outrun is my own darkness, always coming at me out of the ground. But that can't be, can it?"
Rock Island Lines with Roald Tweet is underwritten by Augustana College, Rock Island, Illinois.
And thanks to listeners just like you, we get to hear Rock Island Lines each and every week on WVIK. And as aforesaid, these are public media giving days. And if you make a donation today, May 2nd, Saturday, there's a double match. So a $15 contribution immediately becomes $45. You can find out more at WVIK.org. But right now, my guest is Amy Schaefer from the YWCA of the Quad Cities. We were talking about some of the other things that are going on. And yeah, what you're doing for youth is phenomenal. But even younger, I think we do well to remember the economic development value of quality childcare. So please tell me more about how we can help families get connected with childcare through the Y.
Oh gosh, yeah. So our childcare center, we offer childcare from 12 weeks, I believe, to 12 years, maybe 6 weeks. Gosh, it's not really my realm.
Nope,
I do get to
sorry.
Walk around it. Oh, you're good. And it is just, it's high quality. The staff are all incredible. I love to chat with them and to stick my head in classrooms here and there. But we work with so many different parents and so many different, every economic status. I mean, we've got families who receive state aid. We've got families that are self-pay. And the good thing is, like, the care doesn't change. You know, nobody's checking, you know, who's paying how much at the door. And that's one of the coolest parts about the Y is that, you know, it's such a place for every family. And there's so many services for every family we greet.
Well, and, you know, I've got grandkids. And in each case, childcare has been part of their early mm-hmm. development. Not only do I see them blossom through that and the encouragement and the spark that it gives them, but I'm also just, I'm left breathless by the costs involved. Right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so in Illinois, and I believe in Iowa as well, it is a state set rate. So the centers are provided regulated a rate by the state. We are allowed to charge more than that if we'd like to. We do not. But then when you bring in that child care resource and referral, they have the ability, based on income guidelines, to support the families that meet certain criteria. So they're not paying that full rate. Because when you're looking at these full price child care rates, I mean, it is, I was just talking to one of my friends on my run this morning, and she said that she spent $25,000 in child care last year.
Oh.
And I mean, as someone who doesn't have children, I'm like, oh gosh.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I'm like,
yeah,
over here, like, well, math is not math. And so it is to be able to provide quality care for these families, to give people the ability to go to work and not be worried about, you know, what's going on at childcare. That's just a super great way to empower the entire family. But again, we see, especially at the Empowerment Center, about 80% female headed households.
Mm-hmm.
So to provide that steady and consistent childcare for these families where, you know, maybe they don't have a spouse to back up and pick up or whatever, so they know that there's somewhere safe for their kids to be. It's really, really important.
Well, the YWCA in the Quad Cities, especially in my recollection, has been good at looking over the horizon to see what's needed and going to be needed. What are you thinking about in the realm of empowerment that we need to be focusing on in the next 12, 24, 48 months?
Man, so we are working with our after-school program. So that's where we've put a lot of effort into, is these youth aged 12 to 18. There is a glaring gap for these youth because they're leaving school, and if there's not funding for after school care, if their school does not provide it, they're out and about with their friends. And we all know, we were all teenagers once. Sometimes teenagers don't have the best ideas, whether they be, I mean, and they're, you know, they're just out there trying to figure out life. And so we have put a lot of effort into some young adult support. So we have our after school program called The Place to Be that meets Monday through Friday. They go up, they take our 15-passenger vans and pick these youth up from Rock Island, Davenport, Silvis. I mean, they are driving across. The van schedule is its own Tetris game itself. I mean, they are fabulous. And through that, we have a program called the Youth Summer Jobs Program. We actually just opened the application for that yesterday. And that is something that I work closely with, where we are providing paid internships for youth to explore a career. And I'm very adamant that it is a career setting. It is not, you're not going to flip burgers for a summer. You're going to go and learn about what you want to do for the rest of your life. Because if you learn about it at, if I would have learned about nonprofits at 17, I mean, I would have cut out a whole bunch of middlemen. And then, I mean, you know, you get where you're supposed to be, but like to give youth these hands-on learning experiences. And then another part of that is to work with local, you know, small businesses, nonprofits, and provide paid work for them.
Mm-hmm.
From our end, say, hey, you know, here's a person, you've got them for this many hours, you know, do help them learn. It's such a cool way to work with our community. And again, work on those bonds, create those connections. And just benefit everyone in it. So really the gap we're seeing, and the place where we're putting time and effort right now, is that young adult population.
So whether I know some young person in my life, or maybe I know an employer, they could each go to ywcaqc.org and find out more?
Absolutely, yes. The only caveat for that program is we are only approved for Illinois youth.
Okay.
But other than that, I mean, it's just such a fabulous program where we also provide like soft skills training. So I talk about with the youth, you know, here's how you request time off. Here's how you go to your boss and ask the hard questions. Here's how you budget and, you know, take what you're, you know, you get your first paycheck. I'll never forget my first paycheck.
Mm.
And I was like, I'm going to go to Von Maur. I'm going to spend it all in the shoe room.
Mm.
And I did. I'm sure I did. But you learn that you can't do that with every paycheck, you know. And so just teaching them these, and especially the youth that we work with on this, all have a specified risk factor, whatever that is. There's many of them. But a lot of the families we work with, the youth are, you know, from a family that maybe they're getting free and reduced lunch, things like that. And, you know, maybe money is not something they talk about in their household. Or if they talk about it, it's in a negative light because there's not enough. And so to provide a space where we say, this is, you know, you're going to get this, and this is how you budget it, and this is how you pay yourself first and save a little bit. All these pieces that, like, you know, in a perfect world, every youth would be taught this. And we know that the world's not perfect. So to be able to provide these skills in a really safe setting where, you know, youth feel heard and understood, it's just a cool thing. It's just so fun.
I got to tell you, Amy, when you mentioned, you know, that people that are younger don't always make the best decision, I winced because you immediately brought me back to some of the less than wonderful decisions that I made in my youth. But how do you, because part of your role, your role is so far beyond marketing. Part of your role is education. And how do you draw on your life experiences when you're dealing with young people, with young parents?
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
You know, as someone who has, again, made my fair share of mistakes, I always say, you know, learn from my mistakes is always the first thing that puts you a little bit ahead for, you know, more than me. But I also just try to say, like, you know, you're human and you're young and you have to learn. I had to learn the hard way so many things in life. But to be able to tell these youth, hey, you're going to learn this lesson, but you can come back to me and say, I need help, you know, and giving them somewhere soft to land, I think has been really helpful. We've had so many youth in all the programs, but in the summer jobs program as well. We've got one that came back to me 2 years later and was telling me all these stories about how he, you know, now he's an electrician trade school and he's so excited, but gosh, if, you know, when he got his first job, he needs to work back up his savings because he wants to buy a car and all these things. And just to know he feels safe enough to come back to me and tell me all these things. He's actually going to come talk to the summer jobs program this year. Cause I'm like, okay, tell them, cause they're going to learn from your mistakes better. Cause you know, you're a little closer to their age,
but
yeah, it's so cool.
Yeah. And I talked about this visionary aspect of the why and looking over the horizon, but, how is the current situation governmentally? I mean, it would seem that would sort of throw a wrench into triage, that you're kind of dealing with things as they come. How is that going?
Grant writing is interesting right now. Certain words are not to be used in grants, and it's very interesting what words are chosen and not chosen. But just again, like, we have to look at things holistically, and I think that if we paint a picture of a better community and then filter in what we need to, that's how it's been helpful, is being able to say, like, this is what we're envisioning. You know, we're envisioning a Quad Cities where, you know, no child goes hungry, things like that. And then you fill in the gaps, but you put that vision first. I mean, no one can argue with, you don't want a child to go hungry, right?
Yeah.
So putting the vision first and allowing for that to lead the way is giving us space to be able to say, hey, you know, you agree on this, so let's move forward.
I like that. I like that attitude a lot. Well, you mentioned you are a Quad citizen of long standing, and we've talked about the great fun you can have at Riverside. But what I want to know is, as a former young person, no, nowadays, what do you like to do in the Quad Cities?
Oh, man.
You mentioned running.
Yep, super active in the Fleet Feet Run group. Run with them. I'm on the Quad City Marathon Committee. I work really close with Joe Moreno. Love that guy.
Mm.
Let's see. I do triathlons, so very
do
active.
You really?
Yeah. I'm going to do a half Ironman here in a couple weeks, and then I'm headed up to Grandma's Marathon in Duluth the next weekend. So I love to stay active. We were running on the bike path this morning, and we were running down Ben Butterworth Parkway, and you just look up, and you're like, why would anyone want to live anywhere else? Like, it is just so cool here. You know,
yeah.
And I said, I wanted to leave. I applied for jobs in Pittsburgh and all these places. And I come back here every time. We're also, my family are big boaters. We've got a boat, so that's fun. Get to use the river in all the ways.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a good place to be. There's fabulous organizations here. So many great nonprofits, it's so cool.
Well, and it is, we try to capitalize that in my job across the street there at Augustana. When students come in as part of their welcoming to the Quad Cities every August, we try to put them on a Celebration Bell cruise, mm-hmm. and just so they realize their proximity to this amazing thing. But I know exactly what you're speaking of, is that I don't run, but I like to bike.
Mm-hmm.
And riding along one of the riverfront trails, no matter where it is, and you suddenly look over and maybe you see the sun glinting a certain way on the water, and it's like, wow, why would I ever leave a joint like this?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Anyway, I'm grateful to hear you say that. Well, what about some other stuff? I love getting to chat with interesting people, but do you get a chance to do any reading, media, movies, music, anything like that you want to share with us?
Yeah, I love to read. I love a good thriller. Love a good book with some kind of intensity to it. I read quickly, so I tear through books when I go into them.
It's like my spouse. Yep.
Yeah, it's just so.
So, what are some recent titles you've had?
So I did Project Hail Mary, of course. We have to do that.
Yeah.
So I love the little sci-fi side of things. I love a good like Karen Slaughter or something, like, you know, someone along that lines. Lisa Jewell, some of those thriller books. I actually just started The Martian, which is the other book by Andy Weir, and I'm like two chapters in. We're not very far, but we just started that, so it might be tonight's agenda, I think.
So you mentioned Project Hail Mary. I've been getting opinions on this from all kinds of people. Some people say if you haven't read the book, go see the movie first. others who say, no, always read the book first. What's your opinion? Have you seen the movie?
Yes, I saw the movie. So I'm not a big movie person. Movies are not, I don't like to sit still that long. Yeah. So
it's kind of obvious.
Yeah.
And I'm very lucky that we got you to sit still for...
I know, it's been almost an hour. So I read the book first. I inhaled the book. I got to read it on vacation. I was by a pool. I think I read it in just maybe 4 hours. I inhaled it. Loved it. The movie I liked a lot. I think you could do it either way. I think I'm happy that I read the book first. I think that I like that I knew the whole story. And then I like, because the movies always have to condense, you know, and so you don't get every piece of the picture. It's like the Harry Potter stuff. It's like, you know, the books have so much more detail, but the movies are so cinematic and beautiful. So I think that's kind of the same trade-off with that.
I like that. I just had a chance to revisit a guilty pleasure of a movie that really has very little socially redeeming value, but Bob Odenkirk in Nobody. And what's fun about that is the music that they chose to weave into it. And so they're mostly familiar tunes. A couple of them are reconceptualizations of, like, say, a Nina Simone or something like that. But the way they work that into the storytelling, I know what you're talking about. It's a different kind of a genre. Mm-hmm. I am blanking as you're talking about the name of the next novel I want to read. It's somebody's story. And it's going to drive me crazy. But anyway, about a semi-mysterious man who comes into a town and they're sort of piecing together who this guy is. Does that ring a bell with you at
all? I don't know that I know the title, but now I want to know when you figure it out. I want you to email it to me.
Well, I have a feeling I'm going to find out within minutes as somebody saying, you idiot, it was this and such and X and Y and that kind of a thing. What about some other gems in the Quad Cities? Let's say somebody's newer to the Quad Cities, things that they should try, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's a concert venue, you fill in the blank. Anything else like that?
Oh, man. Okay, so I grew up in Moline, so I'm very partial to, like, the Bent River, going down there, getting a burger basket, sitting outside. I love tater tots. Anyone that's got tater tots, I'm in on. But then, I guess, again, I was a young adult when, like, Armored Gardens opened, so that patio is
now that is a burger. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
That's a very good burger.
Those burger baskets, like, way back in the day. Oh, they were, like, $5 burger baskets on a certain night of the week. We would go every time. So great. So I love that. I just love patios. So, like, Crawford, I mean, in Rock Island, Radical Effect, love their patio. Floyd's Saturdays, I don't know if I'm heading there after this, I might be. I just love a good Adventurous Brewing in Bettendorf. I lived in Bettendorf for a while, and that was right by my house, so I loved going down there. Again, just give me a patio and some sunshine.
So you've moved around the Quad Cities. One of my favorite things. I love, you know, I think of the Quad Cities as kind of like a bigger city with boroughs, like New York. Mm-hmm. Tell me one of your favorite things about each of those places you've lived, Bettendorf, Moline, Rock Island.
Oh, gosh. Moline, to me just feels, it's home. So I have so much love for it. Bettendorf was just a little different. I think that I never lived on I lived in Ames for a while, but then living on the Iowa side, there was just a difference about the Iowa side. But I loved the neighborhood I lived in Bettendorf. And I love, it was just a very neighborly neighborhood. Everyone was out and about waving. And then moving to Rock Island, I'm really getting the same. I mean, gosh, my neighborhood is so friendly. I'm loving it up there. But I just, you know, bought my house in December, and I think what I like about Rock Island is I'm so close to everything.
Of course.
So in Moline, my family is pretty close to stuff. In Bettendorf, I was very far from, like, grocery stores and things like that, just where I was located. And in Rock Island, I'm like, I can, like, spit on Aldi, like, it's amazing. So loving that.
And I hate to say it, but, you know, the other nice thing is that you don't get bogged down in traffic jams. No, you can. Yeah, that's one of the things I love the most of all.
Oh, yes.
Well, Amy Schaefer, thank you so much for sitting still this long. I really appreciate it even more now that I've had a chance to visit with you. But thank you. Amy Schaefer is the Empowerment Director from YWCA of the Quad Cities. You can find out more at ywcaqc.org. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you so much for having me.
And sad to say, that's going to have to do it for this week. What do you know? And remember, friends, you can always catch the conversation twice each week on WVIK. After the Saturday Morning Live edition, you get a chance to hear a rebroadcast Monday evenings at 8, right after Fresh Air. You can also find recent episodes at wvik.org and just look for us under the podcast tab. From the campus of Augustana College, this is Kai Swanson inviting you to join us next week for the conversation on WVIK. Our guest next week, I hope you'll find this as interesting as I do. It's a fellow named Chris McAuliffe, who's got some ties to our community, but then went off and made a career in Chicago and just wrote a book about bicycling in Chicago and how to be a bicycle-friendly community. And that means that's just before Bike to Work Week in the Quad City. So I hope you'll join us next Saturday morning, 10 a.m., on WVIK Quad Cities NPR, coming up on 10:59.
You've been listening to The Conversation on WVIK. If you missed part of it or just want to hear it again, tune in at 8 o'clock on Monday evening, right here on WVIK. Support for WVIK comes from iSurgeons Associates, providing eye care to the Quad Cities for over 40 years. Services include eye exams, cataract surgery, LASIK, and retina care, with locations in Bettendorf, DeWitt, Muscatine, Rock Island, and Geneseo. More at esaeyecare.com.
I'm Andy Roman from Rock Island, and WVIK is my NPR station.
With national and international news at the top of every hour and local news throughout your day, we're WVIK, 90.3 FM and HD Rock Island, and at 95.9 FM, K240DZ Dubuque. WVIK, Quad Cities NPR.